I think if I was going to pick anything to reboot personally, either Firefly or Buffy.
Oh my God, yes.
Buffy could both use like a nice reboot.
No, go back to Firefly.
Okay, so I love Firefly, but if you want it to be a reboot rather than, you know, we're going to time travel and make them do the second, third, whatever, fourth episode. If you want to reboot it where it's actually restarting, what would you have them do different?
I honestly don't know.
Go for more than half a season.
Yeah, like go for more than a few episodes.
Hello and welcome to Worldcasting, where we discuss real made-up things. I'm your host, Adam Bassett, a UX and UI designer at Campfire Technology, game designer at Smunchy Games, and sometimes I write or draw things too. Today we'll be discussing retconning and rebooting, and joining me to talk about all of the ways that we can reinvigorate or bring back projects are Kathy, Devin, and returning to the show from Fable 42, Chris Solo. Let's all introduce ourselves.
Hi, I'm Kathy, the overprepared GM. I'm a writer of World Building Magazine, a web project manager in my daytime job, and a big science fiction and fantasy buff.
I am Devin, also go by Cats. I am an aspiring author, full-time DM, and also a math student.
Hello, I'm Chris Solo. I am the founder of Fabled 42. We stream D&D games almost every day of the week. Very excited to be here.
Awesome. Thank you all for joining us. I'm excited to talk about this topic, especially just because, and I actually haven't told anyone here this, I just realized, I am going through a little bit of a reboot situation myself with the project I'm working on for myself. So I'm kind of in the thick of it right now, and I'm excited to hear what everyone's thoughts are on these topics. So I think to kind of kick it off for anyone who might not be aware who is listening, I think we should probably start with, you know, what a retcon is and what a reboot is.
Well, for me, the difference between retconning and rebooting is that when you're retconning, you're pretending it was always like that, you know, like what? You didn't realize that such and such has happened? Whereas when you're rebooting, you're saying, okay, let's throw out the old one and let's start over. And you're not trying to pretend there's a continuity between the two different things. It just replaces it entirely. Does that work for you guys, or do you have a different take on it?
Yeah, I feel like most people use retcon as a way to try and correct mistakes that have happened in the past or add things that they wish they had thought of at the time. But then, like, rebooting, like you said, you're starting over from ground zero and gonna see what you can come up with a whole new, like, set of ideas based on the same concept.
I feel like there's also a lifespan or a time frame in which retconning matters or within which it can exist. Because like when we're talking about world building, for example, which I think is something a lot of people are going to be able to relate to here. When we're talking about that, there is a constant kind of flow of information changing and being built on. One thing that I like to tell people to do when they're struggling with their world building is to just invent one thing and then branch off of that and invent something else. So, for example, one example I've used before is like if you go build a religion for your setting, don't go build something else. Build something that matters to that religion or someone who's been impacted by it. So you could have a character who is not part of that religion, who has experienced some difficulty getting where they need to go because they're excluded from it or because people who aren't part of it, you know, can't go into this location, whatever that may be. Now you've got a religion that is exclusive or views the people who are not part of it as maybe lesser. You know, how does that main character then deal with the situation? And what does the society look like when it's kind of divided between people in this faith or people in another faith or religious versus secular? And all of a sudden we've spent maybe a minute on this and we've already got a very simple plot going on. So I think that there's an element of world building where you're constantly kind of building something and then going back to expand on it or going back to revise it based on new content you've created, especially if you're building one of those large world guides or world Bibles, people sometimes call them, a resource for your story or your campaign or whatever it may be, so that you don't forget what you've made. Because when you're making those, there is that constant iteration. And I feel like when we talk about the definition of retconning especially, you know, we could call that retconning because you are going back and changing something, but if the work that you've been developing is not final yet, it's not presented yet, I think at that point, it's not retconning yet. It's only after, you know, the book has been published or the game has been started or whatever the case may be, you know, this thing is out and it's beyond the creators, it's beyond the scope of the creators who have been involved in making it. And when you go back and change things at that point, I believe that's when it becomes retconning.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, from the streaming world and the perspective of that is, you know, I've built my world and I went too big to begin with. Instead of starting small and starting with just a city or just a region, I built an entire planet. But
classic.
But when you, like, retconning in my world anyway, because I'm currently working on a 3-book series for the world of Ukador as a campaign setting book, which means that everything is actually real. And then at that point, I need to stay by the book and I can't retcon anything else. You know, at that point, it that is the truth. So, I mean, I've run into this issue a lot where because I'm running a network and I'm running multiple streams and I have my streams and I have other people's streams, that I'm tired. And then sometimes I misspeak. Where I forget what I said and I didn't write down the proper notes. So then there are opportunities there to be like, oh, did I say this was Voltok that came here? It was actually Volruk. And I know the names are similar, but, you know, we're going to have to retcon, you know, what I had said in a previous episode. And that's for people who are, you know, paying attention on the streams, because we have some very avid Ukador fans that know the lore almost better than I do, which is, it's good, but it's terrifying at the same time.
Well, that's one of those things. It seems like the more popular your setting is, the more prone you are to realizing all of the mistakes you've made along the way.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I created my own world. I didn't want to do it in Greyhawk or, you know, Forgotten Realms, because it's so deep and I'm like, I'm not going to remember everything properly.
Yeah,
so
it's really hard to remember an encyclopedia's worth of knowledge every time you sit down.
Exactly.
At least when it's your own, you can make it up as you go.
Yeah, because someone contact Ed Greenwood and tell him to just kind of simplify it a little bit for us.
I think there's also a certain amount of different opinions or different takes on it based on whether you're looking at it from the creator's point of view and the fan's point of view, because you can be talking about the same world, but the world that the audience has in their minds and the world that you have in your minds isn't necessarily the same. And so a perfect example is, let's say, The Highlander, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys remember it from the 80s, the original movie series, mm-hmm. but they came out with Highlander 1, and I don't know if I could say it's a great movie, but it's certainly a classic movie with impeccable music. Then they came out with Highlander 2, and they didn't say anything that directly contradicts Highlander 1, but I think everybody just unanimously wanted to say, nope, that one never happened.
Yeah.
Because it contradicted what the audience expected, even though it tried to make it work, you know, without actually changing it. So I think there's what's literally written down, and then there's what's acceptable within sort of the world that is in the audience's mind that's not in your hands any longer.
Yes. Yeah, I think that kind of sums up retconning really well. I do want to move on to rebooting a little bit, because we haven't talked a whole lot about that. And it's related, but it is quite different, because when you're talking about rebooting something, and I'm probably going to use this example a couple of times today, but I think a really good example of this is the various versions of Sherlock and Holmes that we've seen throughout the years from the original Arthur Conan Doyle stories, because those have gotten to a point where people are just kind of like taking those concepts of intelligent investigator and the doctor, you know, going off on adventures and stuff, and really taking them in interesting ways. So like you have the BBC version, which tries to just bring them into a modern era. And then you have, there was a recent adaptation on Netflix, which like brought in these occult and mystical elements for some reason. And I have opinions on that version, which I won't get into here, but it was an interesting concept, I think, to take, you know, this story and these characters who we generally already know, and then bring it into this different, more mystical space.
Or even with that, we have like the Enola Holmes movie on Netflix.
Yeah, that's true.
And it was like, we're just going to create a little sister because we love that world so much that we want more of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was good.
It was good. It was good.
Yeah, and
it was
absolutely good.
Well, it's interesting because that's a perfect example, because you have something that's been rebooted that is still actively being rebooted. You know, the Cumberbatch Sherlock, and you have the Downey Jr. Sherlock, which another one is coming out. And then you have the the TV series. There's a TV series where one of the two is a woman. And I can't remember what platform it's on, but it's also very active as well. So you have like different universes or different takes on that same reboot, which is, it's fun. And Enola Holmes was actually very entertaining. So
how fun would it be to just all of a sudden have like one new adaptation that just ties them all together, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that, because the popularity will go to Spider-Man, for example, for reboots. And Tom Holland is the best Spider-Man. You can fight me on that. So
we won't, though.
We won't. But have you guys seen the new trailer that came out yesterday?
Oh my gosh, yes. I'm very excited for it.
They're tying in Spider-Man 2. The same Doc Ock and Jamie Foxx, who played Electro, is in this new Spider-Man. So they're taking the success from the animation I can't remember what it's called.
Spider-Verse with
Miles Morales. Spider-Verse.
Yeah, so they're taking the success of that, and they're actually making the live-action Spider-Man series the same thing,
so,
where it's tying in those different universes.
So which films are these characters from? Is it the original Tobey Maguire ones?
One of them is Tobey Maguire. I can't remember where Jamie Foxx was in that.
That was the Andrew Garfield one, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, your reference to the multiverse from whatever the animated one was called. Jeez, I love that movie, but I just can't remember the name of it right now.
Yeah.
Your reference to that kind of just confused me for a second, figuring out like where these characters were from. But that's really cool. I haven't seen the trailer. I'll have to go check that out.
And the trailer has Alfred Molina in it, which just made the fan base explode in excitement, because we haven't seen him in years now, but he was hands down like the best Doc Ock that we've ever had.
This conversation is really going to date the recording of this podcast when it comes out in like February
release.
Yesterday. We record all of these well in advance because we are a volunteer team, and it takes time to edit these.
What's up, 2022?
And sometimes people suddenly leave to go to school or something, so.
Yeah. Oh, I was thinking, you know, as I'm listening to this, and we've gotten really used to reboots within movies, but that's sort of a continuation of traditional literature, where you take stories and you tell them and retell them, legends, fairy tales, folk tales, urban legends, stuff like that. And that impulse is not a new one, even though we associate it with a very new media. So one of my favorite examples is from the Disney movie, The Princess and the Frog. And that version, which is set in 1920s New Orleans and kind of has a different twist on it, is based on a version of a girl's book series that's called The Princess Frog. I forget, it's early 2000s, I think, that it came out. And that version is based on, you know, the Brothers Grimm version in the 1800s. But that's not the original version. People have found versions of the story going back to the Roman Empire as a political satire of the Emperor Nero, which is not something that we associate with it anymore. But this idea that you take the core of the story and just keep retelling it and regurgitating it and reinterpreting it every time for a new generation or a new circumstance is something that I think we feel driven to do.
Yeah, that's really fair, actually. I didn't know the story was quite that old, but yeah.
Yeah, that I like it because I found out that it was, you know, making fun of Nero. It just seems so incongruous with Disney.
Mm-hmm. And to sort of echo that point a little bit, you know, we just recently, at the time of recording, saw the release of that new Green Knight movie come out, which is a retelling of the Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, which was originally an Old English poem, I believe. I haven't gotten to see it yet, which is unfortunate, but it sounds very interesting, and it's neat that someone, you know, modern day and age and everything, would take that old story and try and, you know, put it into a film. I think the reviews I've seen sum up my expectations of how that went.
So it seems like, oh, this is changing the subject a little, but it seems like all of us are world builders. Here's my question that I'm curious about. When is a good time to retcon? When's a good time to reboot? And when's a good time to leave it alone?
Well, I think the best time to retcon anything is before you publish and before your first game starts, if at all possible. Because then it's not really retconning. You're just like still in your preparation mode. So, you know.
So your advice for when to retcon is don't do it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in a perfect world, yes. Like in a perfect world, you have everything. Yeah. Everything is done. But that's when you say that, though, it's never done. Right. You're always like, I can't add this. And well, I'll do this. And, you know, you're always trying to modify things. But when I first started Ukador, I had it set up very similar to our calendar and date system. Right. I had a zero and I had a bunch of stuff that happened before that. And then I had a bunch of stuff that would happen after that. But it's very, very restricting. So the entire first campaign of Realms of Ukador, or at least almost all of it, took place in 839 D.C., which was the dawn of civilization. But after that, about halfway or three quarters through the campaign, I realized how restricting that was, because I started adding more lore and more campaigns. So like any campaign I ever do or anything that we do online on a stream is canon. So I was like, okay, so then I switched everything to ages. So the campaign that was 839 is now 839 of the third age. So that was something that was a major redcon that I had to do during an actual live broadcast show. And it didn't really change anything. It didn't bother anybody. The year was still the same. It just wasn't DC. It was the third age. But to continue off of that, I wasn't done. I was building my world in real time. I had a lot of surface level stuff. I had the gods, but I didn't know, you know, how they became gods. And I'm constantly evolving and changing things. And I'm pretty close to being done now. But there was an opportunity in the second season of Realms of Ukador where I realized I made a lot of mistakes. So without going too deep into it, I had another show that was called Wizards of Ukador that took place in the first age. I had Origins of Ukador that took place in the second age. And then Realms took place in the third age. And I have some other ones that took place in the future as well. And all these different timelines were tied in together. We had characters that were still alive from all those ages that the fans were like, oh my God, it's still alive. You know, ancient silver dragons that are walking around in their, like, you know, humanoid form. And it's, you know, it's always kind of fun when you can tie that in. But the biggest retcon I had to do, and it wasn't a retcon. It was a manipulation of time, which hurt my brain. But someone went back in time, you know, using time magic, and changed something that created this ripple. This was my way of not retconning the entire first campaign.
Oh,
right?
Okay. So this was how you fixed it.
This is how I fixed it. So technically, it wasn't a retcon. It was just, this is an alternate timeline that we're on now. But it was very painful to go back and do that, because I had made mistakes. Like, long story short, I created my Dracula, and then the group in season one killed the Dracula, which then in that moment, you know, in my excitement, oh, you killed the Dracula, that means all the vampires died.
Oh no. Well,
oh no.
So what I had done is I had taken my favorite enemy ever and I had removed it from my world. And I was like, oh crap. Like that's not good. So with this new thing, he was one of the higher ups in it. So like the timeline didn't change too much. Just who was the one who started is the one who changed it. But you know, you make those mistakes. And the problem is I'm doing everything live. So there's a lot of people holding me up accountable for things. But it's been a fun experience nonetheless. But yeah, that's my crazy retconning.
I think there are a couple of really important things to consider with that entire story. Now, number one, I think you're in a little bit of a special circumstance being a game master for all these people for Ukador and everything. Because, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but the people you're playing with kind of help you build the world as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, yeah. So like, you know, they're saying what their backstory is. They're saying what they want to go do. Their actions impact the world. And, you know, that's going to create impacts on the setting. And so, you know, them killing, you know, your version of Dracula you know, obviously, you know, you got caught up in the moment as well. But also if they decided to, I don't know, talk him down or something and roll a nat 20, like that would have had drastic impacts. So I think the way that you're telling the story is important to consider as well. And like it, how collaborative it is mm-hmm. and how it is presented can really change when you need to do these kinds of adjustments and retcons and all that kind of stuff. Now that being said, my original answer that I wanted to say to the question of when do you do a retcon, I think that the best time to do it is when it makes sense for the story that you're telling or the game that you're playing or whatever it is. So like you mentioned going through time, and I think that is a really good way of, you know, changing things up because it made sense for your story. And it, yeah, painful for you to go back and fix these things and to kind of have to finagle a whole time travel plot, which is obviously not an easy thing to do because time messes everything up. But, you know, if you can make a retcon make sense for your story and, you know, make it feel earned, that is absolutely the best way to do it.
I remember the most impactful retcon I sat through was with the first run of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV show. And at that time, you have to remember, there was no streaming. You just sat down on the couch and watched whenever it happened to go on. And on season 5, Buffy suddenly had a younger sister. And I hated the writers of the show with a passion for thinking that we would be so dumb as to not notice that she never had a sister before, and all of a sudden we had a sister now. But there wasn't a lot of choice. I couldn't make them change it. And the second episode in the season, she was still there. Third episode, she was still there. And after a while, I got kind of used to it. And I don't remember when it came out, but it turned out that that whole arc of her having a younger sister actually had a plot-related reason why it happened in the universe. And so it wasn't the writers assuming that the audiences wouldn't notice or wouldn't care. It was actually part of the story in there. And once they revealed, like, oh, they've changed the memories of the people and she wasn't here all along and it's a very sudden thing, then I loved the writers more than I've ever loved writers since that time. But I remember it was just a very emotional thing. And I asked some of my friends, hey, we're going to be talking about retconning. What do you think of it? And I've been really surprised at how emotional people get. I think my best friend, when I asked her, she was like, I hate it. That was her initial response. I mean, you get some really emotional responses.
Well, I think it's a lot of just like people not liking change. Like you get attached to a certain cast of characters or a certain environment that the story is being told in. And then if that changes or you're told, no, that's not really how it was, and actually this is the way things are and have always been. You know, that can be upsetting, especially when it's not told in the right way. This is kind of an aside, but I think a good example of just a retcon or like a retcon not being told in a optimal way, you know, we can look back, this is a bit of an old example, but we can look back to when Dumbledore, when Dumbledore was basically announced as gay on social media by the author.
Okay, J.K. Rowling is literally the worst example of retconning in the entire world.
And that's why I wanted to bring her up, because I don't pay any attention to her, and I still know how terrible she is at this.
She keeps going, too. It's like every few months she drops new little tidbits that no one cares about, but just ruin it.
Yeah. So, like, I think, you know, this point about figuring out when to do it is also tied to how to approach retconning. And I think, like, you know, these examples that we're using as ones that are working are done in the story that is being told. It's not like an aside of the author just being like, oh, by the way, this is also a thing. And you just never knew about it because I didn't write about it or we didn't talk about it. And it's like, okay, but if it's important, why didn't you talk about it before this? Like when you're telling your audience about new information, you know, in retrospect like this, just through social media or just, you know, in this very, I guess, impersonal way outside of the story, it detracts from the rest of it. and I don't know, cheapens the adjustment or the information, even if it was, even if she'd always planned for, you know, Dumbledore to be gay in this example, like it just cheapens the reveal or the information by telling it this way.
Well, I feel like the main thing, and Kathy kind of touched on with people getting emotional, is people invest so much time into these fake worlds. And if you retcon poorly like that, it almost like damages people's opinion of the time they've spent getting to know and enjoy the characters that you introduce them to. So it does cheapen it when handled poorly.
I have an opposite example of retconning where, I don't know if you guys know Ilona Andrews, but it's a writing husband and wife writing team. And they wrote the series called Kate Daniels, urban fantasy series. And there's a character in there called Hugh, whose last name I forget. And he's just a giant dick, like the most, you know, specifically written to be an antagonist, the second in command for the big bad. It's like an 11 book series or 10 book series, something like that. And so the writing team didn't want to get to the big bad until towards the end. So Hugh was kind of like an arc of a character that the protagonist had to deal with a couple of times. And he had her imprisoned and starved and, you know, was a mustache twirlingly proud of it, you know, killed off little kids, stomped puppies for all I know, right? Like that kind of bad. And as a joke, and they have a very active fan community. As a joke for April Fools, they said that they were going to write a romance with Hugh, thinking that it would be like, haha, so funny. And all these people wrote in like, oh my God, I'm so excited to see it. I'm dying to read it. And they were like, no, Hugh's a bad guy. April Fools, haha, funny, right? Except that the fans were like, no, but really, we want to see it. And so after badgering for I don't know how long, finally, they broke down and said, okay, fine, we've started thinking about it, but no promises. And then a little more time goes by and they're like, okay, fine, we're writing the book. They wrote the book, bestseller. And they had to really retcon this character from being just mustache twirling villain to male, you know, lead protagonist love interest. Yay, wouldn't you want to have someone like this? He's really just misunderstood. And I don't know, the mental gymnastics were amusing. I read the book. I'm not proud of having made the transition, but they're awesome writers and they made it work. But that was an example of like, they just took, you know, retconned because the audience forced them into it.
Well, and that happens a lot with audience pressure. I mean, there are dozens of characters on shows that I grew up with where that would just disappear on one episode. And it's like, well, the audience didn't like them enough, so that child is just gone forever. And it kind of became a running gag through the 90s or the 80s and 90s of like these characters that would just disappear and they would reference it. And it's like, okay, I guess, but you know.
But we've been conditioned to accept that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have multiple reasons why someone is recast. You know, you go to the Spartacus TV series where, you know, they did a whole prequel hoping that he would recover from his cancer treatments and he didn't.
Yeah.
So then they had to recast the role of Spartacus. And, you know, the first few episodes, it was weird, but then you accept it and then you move on. You know, there's lots of opportunities for that where things just don't work. And like, who are these focus groups? Who are these...
Right.
These reasons why, and they're like, well, we love that person. Why did you take them away from this TV series? Or, you know.
Well, like, how many Spider-Mans have we had at this point since I was a child? Like, far too many.
Far too many. I mean, just like Batman.
Well, just enough to maintain the media rights, so.
Batman, and then X-Men is doing it now, too.
Mm-hmm.
This also reminds me of Game of Thrones, when they would just, like, recast the Mountain every couple seasons, when he would show up for that one scene where he had to fight someone, and then he'd go away and come back as a totally different person.
And then they decided to just make him a zombie, so they could just keep a mask on him the whole time.
Yeah. They were just like, screw this.
Yeah.
So it sounds like we have a few different reasons why you may need to retcon. So one is just to give more information that maybe you had in your head, maybe the audience didn't have in their head. So like the Highlander or the Dumbledore examples, I think would be good for that. Another one is to sort of retroactively set up plot hooks and points. And this happens a lot with RPGs. Mm-hmm. Where you're doing everything, if you want to have foreshadowing or if you want things to come together, sometimes it takes a little manipulation of history. And then the third is audience reactions. You know, they loved it or they hated it, and so we need to accommodate the audience. Is that it, or am I missing one?
I mean, I think also just like fixing problems that you notice as the creator, because, you know, I think especially if you're working on like a solo project, it's very easy to either lose sight of potential issues or forget about something or, you know, make mistakes. And, you know, now you need to go back. And if you want to see those issues rectified, you have to do some kind of retconning. Similarly, you might also run into a situation where you do something one way and then you get inspired to update it in a new way that makes more sense or fits the world better or is just more exciting. The one thing I'll say to that, though, there was a person I used to know who was working on their own world building project, whatever it was. I didn't really keep too close tabs on it, but basically they met someone one day and heard about what they were working on, got really inspired, and then like the next day or two showed up and was asking for feedback on this big retcon they were doing. And it looked eerily similar to something that this other person was working on. Yeah, it was one of those. Which, like, I don't think it needs to be said too much that, you know, you shouldn't steal stuff. Definitely be inspired by things. Take ideas in a new direction that fits your setting or that, you know, you can put in a new light and approach it from a different direction. You know, all of that is totally fine. But I think when you're talking about, you know, the situation where you're inspired to change something and then you go change it, I feel like it's a lot easier to fall into that trap of just doing what that other person did and fitting it into your world if it works. When I think you do have to be very careful, you know, to avoid that situation. And, you know, even when you are taking inspiration, still making sure that you are making that content your own and changing it in some way so as not to just kind of rip somebody else's work and put it into yours.
Well, I think it's important to do that if you're trying to publish, but if you're doing it for your home game, for your own work,
yeah,
just
that's,
for your
that's
own pleasure,
point.
Then
that's a fair
you
point.
Learn a lot.
The context.
You, yeah, there's a lot to be said for learning by copying, as long as you're not trying to pass that off as original work.
That's very, it's a very good point.
Which is, I mean, that's one of the reasons fanfics are so popular, because those are basically just fan-made retcons that make the story more how they want it. But most of the ideas are already there for them.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about it that way. And I do always urge people who are newer writers to begin with fan fiction if they're at all interested in it, because everything is already made for them. They just have to worry about character relationships, plot points, and that kind of stuff. But even some of that is already set up for them. They just have to kind of actualize it.
Mm-hmm. I think another piece of advice that's useful is if you are inspired by one thing, it's very hard to keep from having it be a copy. But if you're inspired by like six things simultaneously, then it's much easier, because you're not going to make it a copy of any one of those. You're going to have some ideas from this and some ideas from that. And in mushing them together, you're going to get something new.
Yeah,
for sure. So I think we've kind of talked about like when to retcon and some examples that we've seen that we either like or we don't. I kind of want to jump back to the concept of rebooting before we move on too much further, because we just haven't talked about that a whole lot yet. And I think it's an interesting question to try and figure out, you know, when do you, or I guess not when, but like if you decide to reboot something, let's say just for an example, I decide to take the characters of Sherlock Holmes and put them in a new situation. You know, I think the number one question at this point is, what are the first steps to figuring out how you approach creating a reboot like that? For me, I think that the obvious, you know, kind of go-to answer is reading the source material if you haven't yet. If you have, probably reread it or at least do some kind of research to see, you know, how the original was written and, you know, what different directions are these movies and TV shows and other versions going. And just kind of like generally understand what you're pulling from. Because even if you are changing it even significantly, you know, I think it's important to kind of understand where all this information comes from before you start dramatically making changes, or especially if you are trying to recreate it faithfully and not change it as much as possible.
I think it's also useful to figure out your point of view. So one, and whether or not you're trying to make it consistent with anything else. So I really like a lot of fairy tale retellings that I've read, some of which are from the opposite point of view. So instead of having Cinderella be the good guy, now we're looking at the point of view of the evil stepsister, or the wicked witch, or the bad guy in the scenario. And I've read a lot that take that well. I don't necessarily like villain retellings where they try to make it in the same continuity as the original fairy tales, because then it's like, I don't know, it doesn't exactly work for me. But are you trying to take it from a different point of view? Are you trying to mix it in with a different culture? Are you trying to say something in particular through the text? I think figuring out why it is that you want to do a different version of this is really important.
Yes, I also agree.
Yeah.
So I think one thing I can probably share about this is just my personal experience. I mentioned earlier on in the recording that I was working on kind of a reboot of an old project that I'd worked on a couple years ago. I don't know if this is going to be helpful to anyone, but you know, I guess this is kind of a example of a work in progress of this happening. So long story short, I created a setting that was kind of based on the early, I think it was like 1800s roughly, because I was kind of interested in that period of like emerging industrialization and everything. I put together a few things for it. I had some people beta read it. It went fairly well. But then I put it down for probably about 2 years and just didn't have time to come back to it. In those 2 years, my interests and everything has kind of changed a little bit. And I tried bringing it back, and a friend of mine who looked at it told me that it was making them think of like the early 1900s instead. And I thought to myself, and I'm like, that's kind of an interesting time period to explore. There's a little bit more technology. I think my style doesn't work as well within like higher fantasy and older time periods, just because I like to just describe what things are. So like if people are getting around, I kind of just want to put them in a car, which like... which doesn't work for every time period, obviously. So, like, I thought at that point, like, technology had advanced enough and it would still have this kind of interesting style. And then one thing led to another, and I think it was like 24 hours later. And I started thinking about the format of the story that I wanted to tell, and it had kind of shifted from a novel to a collection of short stories, which I've really grown to enjoy both reading and writing lately. And I started thinking to myself, like, it would be really interesting to do this from a futuristic kind of sci-fi perspective, because I could explore all the same concepts I was hoping to and bring in new elements like corporate interests and, you know, that classic sort of cyberpunk issue of, you know, controlling memories and stuff like that. And basically everything that I wanted to do still worked, and I was able to describe things in ways that were more comfortable for me. And I ended up kind of again changing the entire time period because of the mix of just like how my writing style has evolved over these past couple years and the new format. From instead of a short novel, now it was a collection of short stories. So like I didn't have the time to necessarily flesh out the magic system as much. I didn't have as much time to flesh out like the unique fictional cultures and everything that I originally set out to do, because I was jumping between different perspectives so much. And so it all just kind of like fit together really smoothly. I reached out to Taylor and I was like, hey, tell me this is a bad idea. And he read through my pitch and he's like, I can't do it. So I think when it comes to rebooting, if you're looking at doing something like this for yourself, you know, really be considering what story you're trying to tell, how you're trying to tell it, and what works for what you're trying to accomplish. if the original version that you made, whether it's like 2 years ago or a week ago, whether like if that doesn't really accomplish what you're setting out to do, then you might need to reboot the project or start retconning some things, sort of depending on, you know, what stage it's at in terms of if you're looking to publish or if it's just for you or whatever the case may be. So I just thought I'd share that because it's something that's been on my mind, obviously, because I've been working on this and it's really been an interesting adventure taking those world building notes from this 18th century world or 19th century world and then kind of like importing them into a very futuristic Earth.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. And I think that's a good, good sign that like there's never really a wrong time to realize that your stuff isn't working. Like you can always go back to the drawing board.
As long as it's not public yet.
Yeah, exactly. It gets a little more tricky once other people have seen it.
Yeah, but in my case, you know, like I said, I had some people beta read this, and one of those happened to be Taylor. So when I sent him this message, like, hey, this is kind of what I'm thinking about. Is this a bad idea? Because he already had read the story that I was originally going to tell, and that story wasn't changing a whole lot. But you know, him saying that he couldn't tell me it was a bad idea, I was like, okay, well, this person who like understands this stuff almost as well as I do, because, you know, my memory of the whole thing had faded over the past 2 years anyway. So I'm like, this person who understands it pretty much as well as I do is also saying like, this actually works. So yeah, no, it's just been an interesting project and other words that are coming out of my mouth, which never really had a good ending. So we're just kind of in this situation where I'm going to continue talking until someone interrupts me or I just stop like this.
So I have an exercise for y'all if you're interested, which is if you could make a case for a retcon or reboot to happen, like not necessarily in your work, but out there in the universe, put the energy and maybe it'll magically occur to one particular property. What would you change? And so I can tell you mine because it's like, oh, say again.
Last season of Game of Thrones, retcon it.
Okay, so how would you do it? No, you have to have a proposal. This is what actually happened.
I was not prepared for a full proposal. I was just still, I'm still burned.
You know what? I was, if you would have asked me this last week, I would have told you something. And the funny thing is they actually did it. The ending of Dexter. And they actually have a brand new series coming that is taking place after that. So Dexter is coming back to fix that he ended up being a lumberjack in the woods. So I'd already put that energy out there. And it
I know the one that I wish I could do, and Marvel Cinematic Universe writers, if you're out there listening, it's probably too late, but this is my idea. So it's always bugged me that they had Black Widow being really sappy about her relationship that never actually happened with Bruce Banner.
Vision. Oh, yeah, that too.
Yeah, that one. And so she's supposed to be this, you know, super spy, manipulative, all this kind of stuff. And I wish that she was just pretending because she knew that he needed psychological manipulation. This would be very practical. And so she went into the relationship and was willing to commit for the rest of her life. So it didn't like she didn't ever lose that particular handle on him. But she was willing to do it as a very pragmatic decision and not just that she's sappy. So that's my retcon. In my head, that's canon. It's what actually happened.
I like that.
That's a good one. You know, and thinking about comic books, I'm going to think about a real retcon now, is I wish that DC wasn't so impatient because Marvel's still amazing, right? We all love Marvel. Marvel TV shows are fantastic, but Marvel, the big universe Marvel had is done. And now they're kind of starting to like do breadcrumbs to build up another big, you know, 10-year run for whatever, a multi-movie series. But there was absolutely no rush to rush into the Justice League. There's absolutely no rush. They ruined the Joker by giving him 15 minutes of screen time with Suicide Squad instead of giving him a proper...
Or ruined Suicide Squad too. I'd say it's the other way around. They ruined Suicide Squad to give 15 minutes to the Joker. Like,
Well, I mean, sorry. The Joker... Well, that movie had lots of issues. But the Joker should have only had like a minute, like a proper cameo. You tease him. He's sadistic. He's he's a reboot of the character. It's great. But all of it, like you literally had the best version of Bruce Wayne and Batman ever. Batfleck is still at the top of the charts for the best Batman ever. And they ruined it. Mm-hmm. And all they had to do was just take their time, do the origin stories, just go for the long run. And you have all these characters that fit the roles. You have a perfect Superman, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, you know, like you have all these characters, and but they rushed it. Mm-hmm. And because they rushed it, they made the dumb choice of trying to do long-haired Superman, and then they regretted it, and they tried to fix it, but then they had mustache Superman, and then that was a whole hot mess. So, like, they just all of their decision-making wasn't smart at all. Like, I wish that they would have just taken their time. And there's still a way to fix it and survive from it. And the Pattinson Batman isn't terrible, so it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But I hope that they figure it out and they get it in line. Because their TV shows are fantastic. Mm-hmm. All of the DC TV shows, Titans, even Doom Patrol, Arrow, Flash, like they're all fantastic. But like, why can't it translate to their movies? Like, why can't they take that long form storytelling into the movies?
Yeah.
I think there's kind of a slightly flawed argument there, just because like you can't take the TV show and put it into the movie because the format of their TV shows are basically soap operas. Sure. And those require a long time to form those attachments that you need to the characters and build out their stories and everything and the relationships between one another.
But it proves that they can do it, though, is my issue.
Yeah, no, like the people who are in charge of the DC soap operas are really good at what they do. The issue, I think, you know, is that they have, you know, number one, it's entirely different kinds of storytelling between the movies and the TV shows, what they're trying to do with it. And then on top of that, you know, different people are involved and, you know, like you're saying, it does seem like they're trying to rush these things out to compete with Marvel and especially for, you know, the Batman v Superman one, they ran into a bunch of issues where like Snyder had family issues and then someone else had to come in and finish the job and there was just this lack of communication. So like, I don't know. I agree with you. I think like it'd be really nice to see all of that kind of fixed, but like even, well, actually they did kind of do a retcon with the Snyder Cut.
Yeah.
Like that came out not too long ago. But like even that doesn't really work for me because the entire story is Martha'd. So
I'm on Chris's side with this one though. You're right. They need to build it out longer and they had the most well-known, you know, biggest fan base. People would have paid the money out several films in order to see it really come to life and they didn't.
Yeah, no, I'm in agreement. Like the DC films I'd be fine if they got redone a little bit. I guess I only took issue with like the concept of like the shows are doing really well. So, but it's just, they're so different in my head.
Mm. Yeah.
I think if I was going to pick anything to reboot personally, either Firefly or Buffy.
Oh my God. Yes.
Buffy could both use like a nice reboot.
No, go back to Firefly.
Okay, so I love Firefly, but if you want it to be a reboot rather than, you know, we're going to time travel and make them do the second, third, whatever, fourth episode. If you want to reboot it where it's actually restarting, what would you have them do different?
I honestly don't know.
Go for more than half a season.
Yeah, like go for more than a few episodes. I feel like it got cut off so fast that it never really got a chance, but we're in the like golden age of sci-fi space drama and it would fit in so easily on any streaming service right now that it would be a success automatically, even discounting its humongous weird cultish fan base.
Well, I mean, isn't it coming to Disney Plus?
What, like the 5 or 6 episodes?
No, like a reboot.
I have not heard anything about that.
Well, I mean, like, you have to be careful with stuff that's cult classics, though, because...
True.
You know, Firefly didn't get a proper run because the studio was just dumb. They didn't think it was great. Yeah. They put it in a bad time slot and yada, yada, yada. But if you reboot that with a different cast, like, the uproar is going to be insane. Because that cast is still around. They're still doing great things. You know, but the problem is because they did a TV... They did the movie.
Yeah.
Which broke the timeline. So potentially retconning the movie or picking up, you know, I don't know. That'd be a dangerous one to reboot or retcon.
Well, that's like, I feel like...
No, I agree with it, though.
Oh, yeah.
I could see them taking a Star Trek approach to it where we're looking at half a generation or a generation later and not try to take the exact same characters, but now you're kind of starting over the storyline, the plot arcs.
I really did enjoy the Star Trek reboots. Or wait, not... Yeah, the Star Trek reboots. Those were pretty decently done.
I think I saw the first one, but I honestly don't remember it very well.
You're talking about the Chris Pine ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they were good. They were good. I thought they hat-tipped and they brought in... Because, I mean, they, you know, I think it was the second one, or was it the first one where they brought in the real Spock?
That was like the end of the first one or the middle of the second one? I forget.
So, yeah, they started doing that multiple timeline thing, and it really hurts your head when you start messing with time. Yeah.
Well, but I actually,
it, you know, I thought they did a good job with that too. And I don't know if it died or not.
Sorry, I actually meant not the reboot of the movies, but when they first came out with The Next Generation and then Deep Space Nine.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm older. I'm sorry. That was the first reboot of Star Trek. Oh, that was a
good one, too.
TNG
Voyager made it go on for quite a while longer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, branch-offs from that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt a lot of trepidation when I heard that they were going to be rebooting Star Trek, because, you know, it was on rerun for a couple decades or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden they're going to make a new Star Trek? That was crazy talk. What? That'll never work. I have to see it. You know?
Well, that's like the new Avatar reboot that's coming out, and people are wary, which is understandable.
The live action one?
Yeah, the one going straight to Netflix.
Well, it doesn't help that the creators have distanced themselves so much from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to tune in, but I'm mostly tuning in to see how big this trash fire is.
Yeah.
And hopefully I am pleasantly surprised. I would love a really well done live action Avatar The Last Airbender show. I think, you know, it has potential, but just based on everything else I'm seeing, it is going to be one of those where I just like check it out to see how bad it is.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will be. I think you're right.
Mm-hmm.
I think something else that I'd really love to see redone is Flash Gordon, because there hasn't been a reboot of that since like the 70s or something. And that started in, I don't know, 20s, 30s, 40s, something like that.
I think my only connection to Flash Gordon is that song from Queen.
Yeah, that's the only reference I have to that in my mind, honestly.
Well,
and the weird clips of it I've seen over the years.
I remember having read that George Lucas originally tried to get the rights to it and was unable to, and that's when he came out with Star Wars. But before Star Wars, he wanted to do Flash Gordon, and then he had to switch to a different space opera and come up with his own stuff. I don't know if that's legit. I don't know the man personally, but that's a story that's roaming around the internet. And I think it does speak to it having a certain historical, you know, resonance, and a lot of material that you could pick and choose from. But it's so old that you could do almost anything with it and no one will care.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd like to see that get the Indiana Jones treatment where, you know, it's swashbuckling. We don't care about reality. Space opera.
And just to follow up on the Firefly comment from earlier, I did look it up. It, as much as I can see, it looks like there is a early version of a new Firefly show in development for Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. I don't really know anything more about that right now. At the time of recording, there's really no other information aside from the fact that it exists. But you know, we'll see if it even makes it the point of airing.
Yeah,
streaming. There we go. But I think it might still be my answer. I guess for what to reboot, I would say Firefly still, because I don't totally have faith that it's actually going to happen, just because there are so many shows that just like get explored but never really fully get there.
Mm-hmm.
For retconning, though, I think I will fall back to my earlier response of just like Game of Thrones, because all of the obvious reasons of why the last couple seasons didn't work And I think my only change there would just be like having the showrunners either be replaced or have them like actually, and I don't know that this didn't happen, but have them actually talk with George, workshop the season scripts a bit more. Like even the actors weren't pleased with what they ended up getting.
No one was happy.
Yeah, so like I feel like it was just rushed and didn't have the time to develop that it needed, especially, you know, once they got to that point where the books weren't guiding them anymore. And like even with the books, they made changes which I didn't love, but I understood because you only have like 10 episodes in a season to get, you know, these books are like over 1,000 pages. So like I get having to make cuts and changes and all that stuff. But yeah, it's definitely one of those sore spots for me because I love the series so much. And like even when they were changing things up from the show, from the book, I didn't really mind as much because I started to view it as like the HBO version. And then the George R. R. Martin version was its own thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess I would just say like maybe basically like workshop the last couple seasons, go through a second like process and then redo them basically. I don't think it's an elegant way to do that, but I'd like it.
Yeah, I think we would, or most of the fans would be pretty happy with that if that happened.
Mm-hmm. Although your description is more retconning of reality than... Yeah. Anything else?
It's a little bit of a retcon, that, a little bit of a reboot.
I don't like reality. 2020 and 2021 have really cemented that worldview for me, and I'm kind of over it all.
Yeah, we can just start over. New script.
Okay, well, we are at about that time where we've got to start wrapping everything up. Why don't we go ahead and share our final thoughts on rebooting retcons. Are they good? Are they always bad? Opinions. We all have them. Let's talk about them.
Well, I think with in regards to any of it, it's the retconning specifically is, you know, it's your story, it's your world. If there's something about it that you're not happy with, by all means, change it. You know, if you already have a book that's out or a campaign setting that's out and there's something that you don't like about it, you make an alternate timeline or you just accept it and move on or make another completely different world, you know, an alternate universe or just a completely different homebrew world and start over learning from all the mistakes that you've made and all the successes that you've had.
Yeah, I mean, I think retcon has its place in world building and writing and tabletop RPGing. I feel like the best way to do it is just to do it. It's like a band-aid. You got to rip it off. If you're improving the story or the world or the game for yourself and your players by doing this, then I don't think anyone's really going to care that much because, the whole point of writing is writing or playing a game like that is to tell a story. So if you're making the story better, even if you have to like kind of play make-believe for a few seconds, it's going to end up better in the long run regardless. Just as long as it doesn't damage the integrity of what you're building with your audience.
I think as creators, we build worlds and it's hard to remember that they're not just ours, that everyone with whom you communicate that world has their own version of it in their heads that they feel belongs to them almost as much as you feel like it belongs to you. And you can't know what's in everybody else's heads. It's very useful if you want to be, you know, successful in publishing or creating and build an audience. It's very useful to understand that as much as possible and negotiate with them. But at some point, it's up to you to decide what fits your creative vision. But it can be more useful if your vision starts to diverge too much from the vision that the audience really holds dear to their heart. Maybe you just need to part ways and start fresh and say, okay, I'm going to do something else because this is no longer the world that I want to play in.
Yeah, I relate to that one. So I'm the one who's going last. And everyone has said such intelligent things already.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we're all very intelligent here, Adam.
Mm-hmm. You all have the brain cells this time. unfortunately. I think if I had to sum up my thoughts on retconning and rebooting stuff, my only real substantial thought is just, aside from what has already been said, plan for it as much as you can. Try to make it a part of the story if it's you know, already out there and you're retconning something, or if you're rebooting, make sure you're doing so for a reason that's going to be interesting. Like, you know, if you are taking like a fairy tale or some classic story and then modernizing it or putting it in like a new situation, seeing it from a new point of view, that can be a really fun exercise. But beyond that, if you want to take it to another level, really think about like the goal of why you are doing that, and you know, put it within a context that's going to work for, you know, the story you're trying to tell. Yeah, just like generally planning ahead as much as you can, or if you can't plan ahead and you just kind of have to make a change, trying to tie it into what you've already made so it feels like even though this change is occurring, it could still logically happen. It's still part of the setting or the story that you've already crafted. Kind of like what Chris was saying earlier, I think it was Chris, was saying earlier about how sometimes you kind of have to grab onto threads of what has happened earlier in your campaign with your players and just sort of make that more important, and suddenly it's related to this new thing that's happening. So yeah, we're at the end of the episode, and again, like always, there is no real outro. But we are thankful that you're all listening with us. We love talking about this kind of stuff, world building and writing and tabletop games and all that kind of stuff. So thank you for sharing that with us. Thank you for being here. And until next time, thanks for listening. Okay.
You gonna let Chris plug all his socials?
No, that's fine.
Oh yeah, we should do that, shouldn't we?
No,
I mean, I don't care that much personally. He has a whole system of social networks.
Yeah.
Well, it's just Fable 42 on all the things, so it's totally fine. We don't need to.
No, now we have to. I got a little blurb. Thanks for joining us today, Chris. Where can people find you?
You can find us at fable42.com or fable42 on all major social medias. But we are live on Twitch every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday at twitch.tv/fabled42.
Oh, no, it's fine. You don't have to do that, he says, and then just comes with this prepared, perfectly executed.
Do you have any idea how many times?
It sounds like something you say a lot.
All right, let's go ahead and just hit that end record button, I suppose.
You've been listening to the Worldcasting Podcast, an affiliate production of Worldbuilding Magazine. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, you can check out our website at worldbuildingmagazine.com, where you can also find links to all of our social media and our Discord server. This episode was edited by Dave Leake of DJL Projects.